Hello, and welcome to another episode of the OIJ PCR podcast hosted by the Online Indian Journal of Peace and Conflict Resolution. I am Dr. Jyoti M. Pathania in conversation with an academic icon who has been teaching for the past 44 years in various universities, Professor Anuradha Chinoy. She's a former professor and Dean at the School of International Studies, Jawaharlal Nehru University. Her major area of expertise is Russia, Central Asian Republics, international politics, and security studies. In fact, our conversation is about possibilities of brokering peace in the ensuing Russian-Ukraine conflict. Good afternoon, Professor Chinoy.
Hi, hi, Jyoti. Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Professor Chinoy, I would want to engage our listeners and inform us about the historical contours of the conflict between Russia and Ukraine in three broad categorizations: A, cultural; B, demographic; and C, the border areas.
Okay. As I think many of your listeners might know, Ukraine is and has been culturally very much part of what Russia is. They're both Slavic countries. Kievan, the capital now, Kievan Rus, was the center for the Orthodox Christianity and the rise of Russian culture. So there's a lot of similarity, empathy, historical continuity of togetherness between these. However, as time goes by, because of the world wars, the rise of Ukrainian nationalism, Ukraine it becomes part of the Soviet Union. Ukraine actually culturally is divided into two parts. One is a Western part, which is more European, and the East, which is Donbass and Crimea, which are very Russian. Now, Crimea is on the bridge, it's like a bridgehead on the Black Sea, and it became part of Russia in 1776. So it's been a part of Russia since then. And Eastern Ukraine, which we call Donbass, where the fighting is on, the civil war is on these days, is very Russian-speaking, though they're all Slavs, East and West. But the difference is that they're Russian-speaking. They follow the Russian Orthodox Church, whereas in the West, they have their own Ukrainian Christian Church. So while these two communities lived together in Ukraine under the Soviet Union, and even after the breakup of the Soviet Union, when Ukraine became independent, many of the leaders at that time were kind of pro-Russian, and Russia had no problem with them. But in 2014, about that time, there was this rise of Ukrainian nationalism and a rise of the kind of regimes and a coup which overthrew the pro-Russian president. And the arguments over there and the general mood in Ukraine started becoming anti-Russian citizens, Russian ethnic, their own citizens who were of Russian ethnicity. So this became the other, you know, a hated community. And they wanted everyone to have only Ukrainian language. They wanted everyone to go to the Ukrainian church, and they didn't like these provinces which were dominated by Russian speakers. And especially they wanted to integrate Crimea. Now, Crimea is a specific problem because in 1954, for administration purposes, Khrushchev, who was a former president in the Soviet Union, he had for administration transferred Crimea to Ukraine. And when Ukraine became independent, it was a very peaceful independence, and they didn't want to take Crimea back. But now, when all this started of anti-Russia hatred, There was a referendum in Crimea, in fact, twice, and the people kind of voted to be with Russia. So there was a secession movement backed by Russians. The Russian military was always there because they have a very strategic fleet called the Black Sea Fleet there, which regulates Black Sea. You know, Black Sea is it has so many countries on its borders, including Turkey and Romania and Ukraine and Russia. So they wanted Crimea back, which they got after this referendum. And immediately after this referendum in 2014, so various things happened in 2014. One, the referendum in Crimea, where Crimea became part of Russia again, and Russian constitution changed to include it. Two, a coup against the pro-Russian president and putting a Ukrainian ultra-nationalist in power. And three, the start of a civil war between the Russian ethnic-speaking Russians in Donbass against the Ukrainian state, because they also wanted to secede and Ukraine did not want them to secede and become part of Russia. And that civil war is what has continued. Now, many people, so, you know, there was a fluid border. Now, this border between Russia and Ukraine has become one where the Russian speakers were going in and out of Russia, because the Russian speaker Ukrainian citizens are all on along that eastern border of Ukraine. But now with the civil war, Ukraine wanted a tougher border, as you say, and the, so I've explained the demography, the culture, and the border, and the civil war continued. And to address the civil war, because yours is a peace and conflict resolution, there were several attempts to address this civil war. There was an attempt called the Minsk I formula between France, Germany, Russia, and the Ukrainians in Minsk, which is in Belarus, a neighboring pro-Russian country.
So can we say,
and there,
so can we say that these were perhaps moves towards peace building initiatives? Could we say that the Minsk Accords?
Yes, definitely they were.
Okay.
So Minsk, there were two accords. First, Minsk I, which said that the border between Ukraine and Russia, where these four kind of these, you know, provinces were of the Donbass, called Donetsk, Luhansk, Zaporizhia, Kherson. These would continue to be part of Ukraine, but this would be a line of contact.
Okay.
That they would be, they would, they should be allowed to speak their language, which is Russian, and have minority rights. And this line of contact should be kind of demilitarized between two sides, Ukrainian and Russians.
Okay.
Now, the Russians agreed to this. It was signed, but no one adhered to this Minsk agreement. So it broke, and again the civil war started. Then there was a second attempt at peace and reconciliation, and that is Minsk II. At that time, the Ukrainian president Poroshenko was there. Hollande, France's president, was there. Angela Merkel, German president, was there. And of course, the Russian representatives. And again, a similar agreement was signed that this line of contact should be respected. There should be kind of, this area should be disarmed. And they would get their ethnic rights. That was a huge question. There was no talk of Crimea. Crimea had become part of Russia already.
Correct.
And interestingly, Jyoti, the Minsk agreements were ratified by the UN.
Okay.
However, they didn't there were violations, because, and why were there violations? One, Ukraine nationalism kept getting harder and harder. Of course, there was a huge American support to these Ukrainian nationalists. Later on, Angela Merkel herself and Hollande and the president of Ukraine, Poroshenko, they said, oh, these, and this is, and I quote this, and you can look at it in any website, anywhere, if you just Google it. They said, these Minsk agreements were just to give time to Ukraine to arm against Russia.
Oh, I
so,
see.
yes, this is officially stated by them later when the war started. Now, of course, the war between Russia and Ukraine, first, it's an extension of the civil war. But the second, and I'll give you several reasons, the second very huge reason for this civil war, which became a war between Russia and Ukraine, was the fact that since the Soviet Union broke up and Russia became an independent republic in 1991, and especially after Putin came into power in 2000, all the Russian presidents who've been in power since the breakup, since independent Russia, that is Gorbachev, Yeltsin, and Putin, they have literally pleaded with the entire West on two things. One, don't extend NATO to our borders, because that will be threatening us. Russia and Ukraine share a 1,000 kilometer, about 1,000 kilometer borderline. And they said, if you have NATO missiles there, they can reach Moscow and St. Petersburg in 5 minutes. It's like putting, it's like China putting missiles on Mexico-Texas border, where you can't even stop refugees no matter how many walls you put, or the Canada-US border, or the India-Pakistan border. Can any country accept a hostile country putting nuclear missiles there, which NATO does? They could not. So they said repeatedly since 2008 that no, this is a red line. We will not accept it. And the American ambassador, who was ambassador to Russia at that time, and currently he is the head of the CIA after he retired, he wrote a letter, and it's on record, to the to President, either it was Clinton or Obama, saying, when the Russians say niet, it means niet, meaning when the Russians are saying no, means no to Ukraine becoming part of NATO. And Putin said it in a NATO meeting in 2008, that don't cross this Russian red line. 13 new countries, formerly of the Warsaw Pact, who were in the Soviet zone of influence, as agreed to after the Second World War, when Soviet Union liberated them from fascist German control, they have all become, we didn't say no, Hungary, Poland, Romania, Bulgaria, you name it, they all became. So they said, how much security do you want? Either then they said, we'll have a NATO-Russia Council. And there was a NATO-Russia Council agreement, but that council never met. So NATO and European security kept increasing, and Russia kept feeling threatened. And they said, we will not allow this. Ukraine should be a non-aligned country. Let them be a neutral country, a bridge between West and East. This statement has been echoed by major foreign policy realists in the US, like Kissinger, like Mersheimer, and many other former ambassadors, etc., who said, don't let Ukraine become part of NATO, because they saw China as a main threat, not Russia. They said Russia is weakened. They won't be a threat, but this, they'll say no, and the Russians can fight to the end. You don't know them. And sure enough, the neocons in the US do not know Russia's capability. So they violated it, and they invited Ukraine to be part of NATO.
Right.
And that is how February 24th happened, when Putin sent in his troops. He thought he could bully them into saying no.
Right.
But, you know, they were pushed into, they really, the West of Ukraine wants to be part of the EU and NATO. So Russia even said, be part of EU, but not NATO. Meanwhile, these four provinces, Donetsk and Luhansk and all, they said, we are seceding. And they had this militia and the civil war going on. So you can see the different layers. You can
Right.
see the security layer. You can see the attempts at peace, which failed. And third, you can see the Russian ethnic speaking Russians in this area having a civil war, wanting to join Russia and seceding. So
Right.
at these three layers, this war started, took place, and since 17,000 of them were killed in this 17 or 40, between 14 and 17,000 before 2000, before Russia entered. And that's where this war started and continues. And there is a fourth point which is not much spoken of, and that is about the United States wanting to have unipolar exceptionalism, primacy, hegemony, you call it what you may,
Right.
which they had when the Soviet Union disintegrated. At that time, China was still globalizing. They were an ally of the US. US was their major partner. They were giving them technology, and Chinese cheap goods were going into the world. So China was becoming stronger. Russia had been weakened for almost 12 years. Whatever happened in the US, the Russians supported, like 9/11, let's say.
Right.
They allowed Russia flyover flights across to go to Afghanistan. Kyrgyzstan had a American base and a Russian base 10 miles from each other in Kant and around the area of Kant. So there was a possibility of increasing peace, but the neocons said Russia is a threat, and to fight China, we need to weaken Russia. So the attempt in this war is why it's an existential war for them, is to weaken Russia. Because after Putin came into power in 2000, he re started rebuilding the Russian industrial complex, the military complex, their capability of being the biggest commodity exporter and possessor in the world, whether it's oil, gas, titanium, lithium, you name it, and they have it. And they were making a lot of money off all this commodity export. And Putin, instead of allowing the oligarchs to take this money outside, which happened for 10 years under Yeltsin, all Russian exchange was going to the European capitals. Now Putin clamped down on them. So he became a bad guy. He was not helping the European economies.
So it remains
And
in Russia.
correct. So that their capital started going in for Russia as opposed to flight of capital and flight of dollars abroad. All
Okay.
this, you know, these simultaneous things. And so to weaken Russia, America backed these Ukrainian. It was like a trap. They backed the Ukrainian and it became a proxy war. So what you have is a proxy war between Ukraine and Russia. There are 30 NATO countries have armed Ukraine,
Right.
and quite frankly, Russia has demolished Ukraine. It's so sad for Ukraine. Those people have been demolished. There have been casualties, which they say could be just in the counter-offensive. The casualties are cited as 70,000 from American sources, and overall, there could be 500,000 casualties in the Ukrainian side. And they say the casualty ratio is 1:7. So that means even 100,000 Russians must have also been killed, soldiers. But the Ukrainian casualties are much more, and
More.
devastation is much more. It's fought on Ukrainian land.
We've gone through the horrors of war in Russia and Ukraine so far. It's more than a year old war now. But since we are wanting to explore the possibilities of, building peace between these conflicting nations. And we also know that in order to achieve peace, both Russia as well as Ukraine must feel secure, So how can they?
Jyoti, you're absolutely right. And there was one such initiative. The war started in February 24th, and in March, Turkey intervened because there was that grain crisis. The grain has to go through,
Right.
Russia blocked the ports of
Right.
Ukraine.
Right.
And a lot of the third world countries were, global south, were suffering because of Ukraine, the crisis. So there was an attempt at peace. And Russia had just these two demands. One, you be a non-aligned or neutral country, do not join NATO. And two, let the local Russian ethnic communities have their rights of speaking their language, working in their language, and let there be two languages formula, like India has, for example.
Right.
But Boris Yeltsin from UK flew down and stopped that initiative. So peace broke down. So now, how do they get peace now? Both sides feel it's an existential conflict. For Ukraine, at least the Zelensky, there are three kind of proposals floating around, many proposals, and I'll briefly talk about them.
Right.
One proposal which Ukraine is saying is the Zelensky regime, that we will not have any talks unless we get every inch of our territory back, including Crimea, and we will fight to the end till we get Crimea. This is their official position. This is being backed by the EU and the US, and they're saying we're not going to have any peace negotiation until we get this back, and we want Crimea. And the counteroffensive, which has been going on and has failed since the last 4 months, has just been this: get back Crimea. But they've not got an inch. They've got like 200 meters, and they've lost 20,000, 70,000 dead. And Russia's got 200 square miles more. So Russia's not fighting an offensive war. They don't want more territory. Russia has more territory than any other country in the world. It's the largest country in the world, and they don't know what to do with their own territory.
Right.
But they want their security, and they want the security of Russian ethnic speaking people who, after the breakup of Soviet Union, found themselves in another country, but they're Russian ethnic speakers. So
Right.
they don't want them to be massacred in civil wars on their border. They've asked for help, which Russia has given. So this is
The
their
first
position.
one.
I told you, yeah, Russian position is these two demands. And
Right.
now Russia is saying we will not give back Crimea or the areas which have become part of Russia, which we have occupied, which is Donetsk, Luhansk, Zaporizhia, and Kherson. That
Right.
is eastern Ukraine or eastern Donbass. Ukraine is saying we want all of that back.
True.
The Chinese formula, which they presented, says territory for peace, meaning you can't take back the territory Russia has, and Ukraine cannot be part of NATO, but both NATO and Russia will give them security that they will be a non-aligned state with security, and everyone will support their rebuilding because it will require $1 trillion just to rebuild the damage in Ukraine. Their airports, their railways, their infrastructure has been bombed. That country is living on US aid. The weak US doesn't give aid, that country will collapse. It's like with a begging bowl. It's worse than any country in the global south. That is a position.
So,
One third of its people have left.
right.
They are
So,
refugees. Yeah.
as you mentioned, Professor Chinoy, that there are we are going to discuss about three peace possibilities. One you just mentioned about Crimea, Russian and Ukraine position both. So what is the second peace building initiative?
See, one is obviously the Ukrainian and Russian is not peace building because they're not compromising on anything.
Correct.
Ukraine is saying we want our territory back, we want to join NATO, it's our free will, we want to join EU and you have no business, just move out of here.
Understood.
Russia is saying, yeah, Russia is saying we will not give the territory we've occupied. There was a civil war, they seceded, there were referendums, they said we want to be Russia. And they're part of Russia, and it's in our constitution. We will not give that territory back, but we will have peace if you, but the condition for peace is you will not join NATO. You will be non-aligned, and you can keep Western Ukraine and do what you want with it as long as you're not part of NATO. You have
Right.
to be demilitarized.
Right.
China has got a similar position to Russia, saying, let's negotiate, let's talk, and let's see what Russia can give. But they also believe that neutrality for Ukraine will have to be one of the conditions. For the African countries who went, who are very close to Russia,
Right.
and countries like India have said, just sit on a table and negotiate, have a ceasefire, and then. But Russia is saying, why should we have a ceasefire? That'll be time for Ukraine to arm again. Whereas right now, we are having a victory on the battlefield.
Right.
So that is the situation.
But the UN, what about the UN as an international organization? Has it played its role?
Well, there were so many UN resolutions. They condemned Russia's entry into Ukraine, the Secretary General, and they have called for peace. On their own, they can't do anything when the
Right.
Security Council is so divided.
Correct.
They're just saying, let's get on to the table, both sides, all three. But the Russians are saying that, we have to talk to America. And Americans are saying, we won't talk to Russia until they leave Ukraine fully.
So
So it's a
one thing leads to another, Professor Chinoy, and there doesn't seem to be light at the end of the tunnel with whatever we have discussed. So how should the peace process be started, in your opinion?
I really think that there is no time frame for a peace process. It could have been yesterday, it could have been a year ago.
Right.
There were attempts, but they failed. So they have to go back to the drawing table and try for some kind of peace again. But at the same time, as you've said in the beginning, the security of both sides must be ensured.
Right. So that needs to be kept in mind. And what about the civil society initiatives? It's after all the common people who are the sufferers of the war. So can they lead some initiatives? Can they, push for peace?
In reality, Ukraine, this war is in Europe, and Europe is very polarized. Anyone who talks of peace is becomes anti-national. So, because they're so determined that Russia should be finished,
Right.
because there is this dominant narrative saying they are a threat. Now, we in India don't feel them as a threat, do we?
No, we don't.
We've never seen, yeah, so we keep wondering why are they seeing them as a threat? They've never colonized anyone.
Right.
There were different colonial countries. They were different. They have not intervened in Syria, Iraq, Libya, Lebanon. They have not overthrown. So we have a good, all of the global South has a good relation with Russia. And quite frankly, Europe has different opinions. And they don't want any peace until there's a victory on the battlefield. And I'm afraid Russia is going to have a victory on the battlefield. But it's a war of attrition. People are getting killed every day, more and more arms. And in the meantime, there's a new war in between Israel and Palestine.
Like I said initially, how the political leadership in both the countries can also play a role. Because until and unless there is a will amongst the political leadership to go ahead and sit on the negotiating table, I don't see things happening on ground. But India, for that matter, don't you think it can and it still can play a role as a mediator, or do you think it's going to maintain the position that it has as of now?
India's had a good position overall on this. They have remained neutral. They have appealed for peace.
Right.
The PM said this is not a time for war, which is a good statement.
Right.
They didn't allow a criticism of Russia during the G20, which was like really holding their own and a diplomatic kind of good maneuver on the part of India.
Right.
So, and they want peace, but what can India do if both sides are not willing, right?
True.
Our Indian leadership speaks to the Russians all the time. We have close relations. They met them at G20. They met them at the BRICS. They met them at various the Far Eastern Forum in Vladivostok.
Right.
And they feel Russia is right, I think. I think India feels that Russia is not at fault because we had supported Crimea joining Russia in 2014.
Right.
You can see on the MEA website.
Right. We'd like to carry this forward with you, Professor Chinoy, in our another episode of, listing down what are the possible peace building moves. So thank you so much. I sincerely appreciate your time and your insightful talk, as always.
Thank
you
you.
So much. Thank you so much, Professor Chinoy.